Welcome to this edition of the Ute Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I am Joseph Silverswag. It is so good to be back. I'm just so happy to be here. You guys don't even know.
And I'm so happy to hear your sound effects again. It's going to be very interesting. Some Pac-12 in crisis. Whatever else we come up throughout this new football season that is getting closer and closer.
I can do a pretty good radar sound. Maybe we should do what's on our radar for next week.
Well, maybe we should have you practice that sound bit first before we pull it out.
I'm not just going to pull it out right now, but next week I will come to you, come to you with a radar sound effect.
It's getting worse. All right. Well, hey, before we get started, some business to take care of. Look, guys, we're trying to increase our listenership, and there's two ways you can help us with that. One is the algorithms of iTunes and the likes of other podcast players. Please go give us a review. If you can't give us a good one, please give us feedback. utetalk@gmail.com, or of course, find Joseph and myself on Twitter and DM us, and we will be happy to address any feedback. Something I always like to mention, especially right now, is Ute Daddy and the process. And Joseph, I don't know.
I'm doing better this year. I can't say I'm following the process, but it is a better situation than it was last year. You might remember that horrifying photograph. I'll have to post another one because we're making progress. We're headed in the right direction.
And I equally am making progress. I'm following it much more strictly than yours. And this is like the beginning of the process for me. I started, dipping my toes in the water, so to speak, when I bought my home, which was a year ago.
Congratulations,
so
by the way.
We've been in there a year. Yeah. But now I'm much more comfortable, and the process is in full effect. And I'm just really looking forward to, weirdly, and maybe it's not weird, but to me it sounds weird to say, I'm looking forward to overseeding in the fall so that in 2020 I have this lush carpet of green
grass.
Yes,
that's the plan. I'm excited about that too.
Yes.
And looking forward to Julys with green soft lawns. I mean, that's the thing. For me, it's not about the way it looks, although it is nice that it looks so nice. It's the softness of it. I get so tired of running around in bare feet or sandals with my kids and all the little prickly bits of grass. Mm-hmm. When you get a good lawn, it makes a really nice surface to spend time with people on, picnic and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to that.
So if you're looking for advice or a process to follow in regards to your yard, don't ask us. Look for Ute Daddy on Twitter. He's got a link in his bio to his page and how you can get in touch with him, and you will not be sorry if that's the way you go. Let me just put it that way. Your yard will be awesome. You just step into the process.
You're better hands
and you use
than
it
would be with, they've got like other systems that you can buy sort of piecemeal and that to promise to do the whole thing for you, but they're not really designed for this particular climate and as carefully as Ute Daddy has built this thing. So it really works. It's remarkable.
For sure. All right. So let's get into it. So first of all, just to give you a heads up of what's happening, we're going to talk our quick hitters, which are just quick little news stories that we want to touch on. And then we're going to get into the bulk of our stuff. We're going to be talking some transfers just because we need to. And then we're going to get into recruiting. And of course, as has been teased on Twitter and last week's episode, we will be getting into Joseph's projections for what he expects.
I've got win projections. They are rosy.
They're very rosy.
I'm excited. I'm so excited.
You should see. Joseph needs to get some rose-colored glasses for how rosy they are to give you a heads up. But let's get into it. So schedule review. There's something very exciting on this schedule. Let me just read this out slowly for you. Okay. August 22nd, Clemson in soccer. So go women's soccer team. Then August 25th, and these are away matches. So the soccer team is in Clemson, South Carolina, and in Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. And then there's this event you may have heard of on August 29th at 8:15 p.m.
What is it? It's so late in the
evening. BYU.
Oh, man.
The team down south in football. It is close.
And I believe that was in Rice-Eccles South this year.
Yes. Yes, it is Rice-Eccles South.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to argue that name. I mean,
When was the last time they
won? I can't even remember the last time.
When was the last time we lost? It's been a while. I want to know how many children I had the last time Utah lost to BYU.
Zero?
Zero. Zero. And my little girl's going into first grade.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. So that's pretty wild. It has been a while, and it will continue. We're, I think, looking at another 365 days of smug victory, and it's getting more and more fun. So they're really starting to lose it down there. I don't know if you pay attention at all. I tried to tune it out, but the BYU media day is pretty obsessive, institutional focus on that particular football game, and I look forward to Utah's media days where they'll be talking about winning the Pac-12 and playing for a national championship, which is their goal this year, and further teasing my win projections ought to be their goal this year.
So before we're going to talk a lot of football, don't worry people, but other quick hitters real quick. Kari Lee from the gymnastics team was named a nominee for NCAA Woman of the Year. So congratulations to her. That's a great honor. Other gymnastics news. I know you guys are all super excited about it, but the gymnastics team added Emily LeBlanc to the 2020 roster. That roster is pretty loaded. So adding another transfer, she's a transfer from Maryland, is a good add. Other news that we're looking at is apparently it's someone's birthday. Our anniversary.
Anniversary. I need to wish a happy anniversary to my beautiful wife, Chelsea. We've been married for 9 years today. And
newlyweds.
You know, she constantly listens to this show. No, she doesn't ever. But I still have to do it.
In case that one time
not
she
even
listens
in case,
to this today.
I just want to shout from the rooftops. So
okay.
No,
hey,
that kind
by
of
all
guy.
Means,
so
do it.
Here I am shouting from the rooftop. She's the best.
All right, so let's talk some transfers. Let's start with
basketball.
I don't
want to talk about transfers. There's so much happy news to talk about.
Well, but
and
we
I remember our
this.
Last meeting, we were like, yeah, if this core group is stable and doesn't transfer out, and
what do you know?
You talk about it.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, look, let's just.
I can't bear it.
In case you somehow listen to our podcast and are living under a rock on media and other news outlets, Donnie Tillman and Jace Johnson have transferred out of the Utah basketball program. And I'll just put it straight up. Look, we lost losing Jace, as much as it's not fun, I'm not horribly sad about. Like, look, he came here, he played well, he was a great defensive anchor
and
last year.
You could
year.
See it coming, right? That yeah. He was not a linchpin part of this team and probably could play more and do more
exactly.
elsewhere. And I totally understand that. But it was Tillman and – and what was interesting about it is the way
well,
you
well, hold on. I haven't even said it.
You talk about
so
it.
So then the Pac-12 sixth man of the year decided that he was going to step away from basketball per the press release provided
to – spend time with his mom, who is indeed ailing.
Yes.
I mean, that's certainly true. I just think that the press team – really overplayed that, right? Because this comes out and I say, okay, that's nice, but also he's probably transferring, right?
Right.
And this is a way
he's
for
just
him
not
to
gonna
take
stop
a year
playing
off,
basketball.
And then yeah, this is a guy with an NBA future. He's not gonna hang up his Air Jordans, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of expected him to transfer, but the way that they rolled it out and the way that they rolled it out to members of the media as well,
yeah.
The story that they were telling everybody through, you know, back channels and you know, loud and clear was he's really got this issue with his mom. This has nothing to do with the team. He was already in the transfer portal when they posted that press release.
I yeah.
mean, everybody knew that.
Which
he was
it came out later.
Yeah.
That it was it came out later that he was in the transfer portal. And now he's looking at Rutgers.
But Utah knew that he was in the transfer portal when they were
right.
telling us he wasn't. So it was really frustrating to have them kind of play damage control and be a little dishonest about it, or at least not fully open about it. Like, and I get why, because it really – it's just a huge, huge blow to the Utes. it is the continuation of this Larry K trend that is just not sustainable. Because if your best trait is the way that you develop talent and your best players transfer, then what use is your best trait?
Well, and you can't even argue it's his best trait anymore, right?
Well, I tell you, Donnie Tillman's going to play great basketball for somebody else.
Right.
You know, so will all the other guys who transfer, because they've been well-developed by a guy who knows how to teach kids how to play basketball really well. But I don't care if Donnie Tillman's the player of the year for Rutgers. You know what I mean?
It
doesn't matter how good you are at developing him if he's not scoring those points for your team. And for me, for my relationship with Coach K, Tillman's transfer is a nail in the coffin for sure.
Is it worth the buyout now?
Well, the buyout keeps going down, right?
Well, true. It's going to keep going down.
I don't know what the buyout is next off season, but I think that that's probably when you start to have serious conversations about looking somewhere else. Because I think he deserves this year anyway, right? Even without Tillman.
Well, I mean, look, the recruiting class he's bringing in, and these freshmen, really the freshmen good. From last year that are still on the team are looking really good. Yeah. So, no, by all means, I mean, Larry K, I think he is good for this year.
Mm-hmm. But he's got to put a product on the court with the team that he has this year that is really, really competitive. He's got to make the tournament, but not just make the tournament. I think, you know,
there needs to be some postseason success.
Yeah, you know, you bump out of the Pac-12 tournament in the second round, and then you're, you know, a 14 seed or something like that. Like, that's not enough to justify the kind of the turmoil that he puts the program in, year out. If you're going to put a program through that, you got to win some games in March, and quite a few of them. You know, we have to be seeing Sweet 16 berths not every year, but on the reasonable expectation of getting those from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't expect it every year. I think the way it's been marketed to me is that he's trying to build a program that's not a one-and-done type program, so he can use his player development skills.
It's a
but that's not
transfer type program.
That's exactly
that's
what
worse.
It is right now.
Not better.
Exactly. It's not good. And hopefully he puts a product on the floor that can keep him his job, because that'll make all of us happy.
And I know that we've placed a lot of the blame for some of the recruiting misses on corruption in basketball, and I think that's fair. You know, and those scandals continue to unfold. But I also wonder if his coaching style doesn't have him as a reputation as somebody that athletes don't want to go play for. And that's part of why, you know, at the 11th hour, somebody kind of whispers in their ear, look at all these guys who have transferred, and you want to maybe talk to one of these guys about what it was like to play for him. It can't be good, or they wouldn't be leaving.
Yep. All right, there's one other transfer news item of note, and it is that Cam Rising did not get his year saved of eligibility. And
A lot of fans frustrated about that because Tuttle got his, the kid who transferred to FSU got his, somebody I think from Clemson wound up with his. So a lot of these high profile quarterbacks got their transfers. I wonder how much it has to do with, it certainly has something to do with what school you transfer to and what those kind of connections that you have there. But I also wonder if it doesn't have to do with just the sort of financial status of the kid's family. If you can hire an attorney to like really build a case, you know, I heard, and this is just a rumor and I don't want to make too big of a deal out of it, I heard that Tuttle had something about bullying on his thing, and I have no perspective on that or no information about that, but to have somebody who's kind of smart enough to find that and turn that into an argument and you know, make a case to the NCAA that makes them feel like they can say yes, is really valuable and is something that you only have if you can, you know, if you can afford it. So I wonder how fair that process is. And it's certainly frustrating. It's frustrating how opaque it is. You don't know who's going to get in. You don't know what the criteria are like. There's no information on the other side of it. So it's really hard to evaluate. It's hard to know what's going to happen. I personally am not even a little bit sad that Rising is ineligible. I think it's a good thing for the team.
Well, I have nothing wrong with that. What bothers me is just inconsistency.
Yeah, it's really frustrating.
And that's annoying, right? It's like, look, sure, by the rules, he transferred. He's got to sit a year. Like, so be it. Like, and it's not bad for his career, right? He's going to sit. He's going to learn the offense. The
redshirting is is.
He's going to be ready to start next year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a bad thing.
And Utah has two really good, you know, tested, proven quarterbacks on the roster already.
Exactly.
And, you know, you don't need him. And if he wasn't, if he was like that, if he was eligible, you're wasting somebody's eligibility, whether it's Tyler Huntley's or Cam Rising's or Jason Shelley's. Like, somebody's eligibility is wasted. The other thing is, there is no incentive for Huntley or Shelley to look at transferring.
Yep.
And that allows the kind of continuity that the team needs. And then by next year, Rising will be ready. And
well, we're going to have a QB battle.
If somebody wants to transfer out, you know, bless them. And they'll be able to transfer out as a graduate transfer and play right away. And so it really works out better for everybody to not have him eligible this year. I understand they want all the talent they can get this year. But I think it's probably in everybody's best interest. But it's a super frustrating process not to know. It's just flipping a coin, and you just have no idea what's going to happen. But that's just the NCAA for you, right? It's just a terribly run organization that feels unfair and difficult to understand all the time for everybody.
And every sport, which is ridiculous.
The misfortune of being involved with it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the positive talk. All
right,
nothing but rose-colored glasses and positiveness coming
so
this point out.
Hardly see through.
So let's get into recruiting. There's been some late recruits.
It has been really – well, this is all class of 2020, actually. So 2019 locked in pretty well. We talked about that a lot towards the end of our recording cycle in the spring. But we have had – let's see here. Three commits since June 20th. The first one was wide receiver DB out of Texas, Ben Renfro. He's definitely going to be playing defensive back for the Utes. That's where they recruited him. Just that prototypical Ute, underdeveloped, long, lanky guy. He's a three-star though, so he's, you know, he's got plenty of talent. Really fast, long arms. Then you've got Kamoi Latu is committed last night. He's another safety prospect. He's out of Hawaii, and I'm given to understand very, very high on the Utes big board. So that
nice.
he's a three-star player, high three-star player, but they have him as a real contributor, and they're very, very excited to have his commitment. One of these players, he's a little underdeveloped. He's only 178 pounds right now, but as he fills out, he's going to be a beast. And then there is Money Parks. I always thought Money Talks or Money Walks, but it turns out Money Parks. And,
at the University of Utah.
Yes! wide receiver, slot prospect, three-star. I like his film. I think he looks good. I like his feet, but you know, we'll see what he does and what position he winds up playing. It's just one of these athletes that Utah gets. And then the big one is Katravis Marsh is a quarterback out of Miami Central, another Florida quarterback. He's listed as a pro-style quarterback. I see similarities. I think because he's tall, he's 6'3". I see similarities to Huntley's game. He's a great ad. It's really nice to get a good commit early. He's three star, so he's not elite. He's not nationally ranked, but he's a really good quarterback to kind of have in your pocket, and indicates that Utah's moved away from the Jack Tuttle philosophy of finding an elite guy and sticking to him. They're probably looking to add another quarterback, and use Katravis as a not necessarily backup option, but as a competitive option for
no exactly. For I mean, class. Let him compete for the job. Yes. I have nothing wrong with that. I mean, look, I also have nothing wrong with a bunch of three stars.
I mean, if you get a class of 20 something three star recruits, you have a top 25 class. I mean, it's good to have three star recruits, and Utah has been filling out lately with three stars. So these guys are filling out the recruiting class, and they'll continue to target you know, elite recruits, four and five star recruits that will, but they, a four and five star recruit's not going to commit in June of 2019 anyway.
No.
So you'll see those guys start to pop
up. Well, yeah, my point is that people, like, it's annoying when people get all up in arms. It's like, oh, we're just recruiting three stars. Where's our four and five star guys? Yada, yada, yada. And it's like, look, these are three star talents that are committed that, hey, guess who's coaching them? Mm-hmm. They're going to be great players.
You just
have
to give, especially every time Utah signs a three-star safety or defensive back or wide receiver who is over 6 feet tall with long arms and quick feet, like that's an NFL defensive back. One of those guys is going to wind up in the NFL because that's what Utah does better than they do anything else is turn these long, lanky perimeter defender and offensive players into the best defensive backs in the country. And you just have to be excited that they're getting the guys they want and the ones that they have projected. I mean, like Kamoilatu projected to develop to be exactly the kind of person they want. And they've proven that they know how these guys are going to develop.
For sure.
No, it's a great start to the class. And like I said, you to be an elite recruiting school, you want to have a base of three stars, and then you compete with your last 5 or 10 scholarships for the 4 and 5 star players. And the more of those you get, the more elite of a recruiting school you are. And you know, my sincere hope is that when December rolls around, Utah is going to have a lot of wins, and those wins are going to be a big selling point to incoming recruits. Should be a nice high-profile year, so hopefully they can get that to pay some dividends, although usually you're looking at the next year's recruiting cycle to really see benefits from, like, the Sugar Bowl year took till 2009, 2010 before those recruiting advantages started to really pay off.
For sure. Well, let's get into what is the key subject of today's show. So, Joseph, let's hear the projections. Where are the Utes going to finish at after this season?
The top. The Utes have the best team they've ever had. They have the easiest schedule they've ever had. And the Pac-12 South is as soft through the middle as it's ever been. I don't have another team besides the Utes projected over 7 wins, the most probable win
in the South.
In the South, there's some good teams in the North. One of them, Utah, doesn't play, and it is just a perfect storm for the Utes to be the best team in the West. And honestly, the goal for the Utes this year should be a playoff berth.
That's some pretty high talk. I mean, a playoff berth coming from the Pac-12, that's like they'd have to win the Pac-12 conference.
They should win the Pac-12 conference this year. I have them as the best team in the Pac-12, closely followed by a couple of the other teams in the North, and that is going to be a tight, intense battle if the Utes are fortunate enough to make it out of the South. But they really ought to win the Pac-12 conference. I'm gonna jump into the numbers here. So the most likely record for the Utes at the end of the regular season is 10-2. They have a 32% chance of that. But the combined likelihood of going 11-1 or 12-0, where they have an 11% chance, is 40%. So they are more likely to have a playoff caliber record, 11-1 or better, than they are to have a 10-2 record. It's just a remarkably, remarkably strong team. They return everybody who's important. They have the best running back in the Pac-12. They may have the best quarterback in the Pac-12. Nobody talks enough about how good Tyler Huntley is. And it's interesting to see Pro Football Focus numbers, the most accurate quarterback in the Pac-12, best at distance in the Pac-12, most mobile in the Pac-12. He's on all of those lists. He's really, really good, and we don't appreciate him enough.
I totally agree. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the new offense comes in. But when you have a Zach Moss back in the backfield, and you say
it's not
hey,
X's
will you go
and
get
O's,
some
it's
yards?
Jimmy's and Joe's, right?
Go.
It's, yeah, you've got a bulldozer back there, and a quarterback who throws the ball where he's
I think you meant a Mack truck.
No, that was number 6. Oh, what was his name? Darrell Mack. I feel like that's already taken.
Okay. You always like to reference Mack trucks, though.
Mack trucks. No, but he's too big.
Oh, okay. He's too big now. Too big now. Yes. He's a bulldozer. He's
ridiculous.
Okay.
But he's one of the best running backs in the country, and the quarterback is extremely talented, one of the best in the Pac-12, the best wide receiver core we've had in a long, long time, tight ends who can actually catch the ball and stay on the field because they can block. The O-line is one of the top units in the Pac-12, and you can't even talk about the defense. The defense is as good as it has ever been. The amount of talent returning is insane. Best defensive line in the country, best secondary in the country. You're certainly going to have that conversation about the Utes are going to be in that conversation anywhere you go. And with the transfers they got at linebacker, they should be unstoppable. And the numbers bear that out.
All right. Well, so what? All right. So you've gone over the records. What other numbers do you have over there that are going to make people even more excited? Like right now, I'm hearing these projections. And last year, I remember the projections being pretty rosy too. But
I mean, dead on also.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give some people the confidence. What happened? What were your numbers, last year?
Right. I mean, I'm really good at it. Yeah. I'm right. I have yet to be wrong. I've been doing it 6 years, and my most likely record for the Utes has been the record they actually obtained every single year.
So based on that, as much as there's a higher chance of 11-1 or 12-0, what your model's really projecting is a 10-2 season.
Yes. Yes. So my projection for the Utes, if you want me to pin it down, would be 10-2. With it sailing into the Pac-12 championship game, that being a coin flip. So my projection would probably be a Rose Bowl for the Utes because they're the best team in the conference. But from an internal perspective, from a fan perspective, I think it is reasonable to be kind of rooting for the playoffs, right?
Sure.
Which isn't to say that you're going to be heartbroken if the Utes don't go 12-0, right? They're not Alabama. They aren't. Utah is the best team in the Pac-12. Alabama is 20 points better than Utah.
Wow.
Projected, right? So 3 touchdowns, so is Clemson. I mean, those teams are just absolutely in their own category and incredibly, incredibly difficult to compete with because of the kind of talent that they command and the way that they recruit. And they have amazing coaches. You know, there's just no weaknesses there. But Utah is in that same group that's going to be fighting for that third or fourth spot if they play as well, particularly in the early part of the year, as I expect them to. What should be what's fun, I think, about this season is their toughest games are mostly mostly at the front of the schedule. BYU,
really?
I've got, yeah, BYU. I've got there. So there's the two, the second and third games are gimmies, but the that BYU, I've got them as 74% favorites, so okay, very likely to win that game. But because it's on the road against a rival who projects to be pretty good this year, last year looked better than we expected them to do. So the year before that really looks like an anomaly at this point. USC on the road, that's always going to be, yep, a tough game. I've got them around 70% to win that. Washington State, tough game, around 70% to win that. The only game I have the Utes with less than a 60% chance to win is on the road at Washington, but I have them favored to win that game. Which is,
so they're favored in every game.
Oh yeah, yes, they are favored in every single game. The closest one to a coin flip is Washington.
Well, and then I mean it's already on the UtahUtes.com, so the Pac-12 football championship game also listed on the schedule here.
Yeah, and
which will be a coin flip.
Yeah, I just kind of project them out as coin flips because that's the easy math, right? And right, there'll be an actual number when we get there. Let me look and see who the most likely winner of the Pac-12 title is. It looks like Washington or Oregon are the most likely to come out, but these numbers that I'm looking at right now are the whole conference, include their non-conference schedule, and Oregon has a tough non-conference schedule because they play Auburn,
Washington, I don't believe, plays anybody. Yeah, Hawaii, an FCS team, and BYU. So Washington's advantage kind of evaporates when you consider just the conference schedule.
Right.
I think that Oregon is the most likely conference Northern Division holder. And that's really fun for storytelling because Oregon doesn't play Utah this year. So we've got a really good shot of, you know, two 10-plus win teams, I'll say, coming into that championship game, having never played each other, with some really, really exciting football games in their history, and it not being Washington the Utes are up against, who has been a thorn in their side.
Yeah,
you know, forever, and has been really frustrating. One certainly hopes that this is the year, but they've really struggled to contain Washington. How do you feel about that? So you don't know. You're not looking at my numbers.
Nope, I can't see
you
any numbers.
You don't have the same.
All I have is the schedule.
Blind, uncompromising faith in the math that I absolutely do at this point. I have sold myself completely on my math. But so what? When I tell you, yeah, the Utes will go 10 wins, really, really good shot at 11 or 12, maybe get a playoff berth, and they should whoop everybody in the South. Just whoop them. And they might, maybe a coin flip against Oregon or Washington in the championship game. Does that feel right to you?
It feels right in the sense that, yeah, we're returning a ton of players. The schedule's easier. Like, this team should be better than it was last year. I think the offense is going to be better, actually. And I think Utah fans are going to enjoy this offense a lot more. But then I
just want 30 carries a game.
Hard.
It's hard to say
it's
right?
It's hard to go. So, like, just running through the schedule, and these do not ultimately determine what my picks are.
Mm.
But I look through the schedule, no numbers at all, just based on names here and my minimal whatever knowledge I have in my head about these football teams.
I wouldn't say it's minimal.
Well, I mean, it's probably not minimal. Sure. That's why I tried to stop myself. But nonetheless, like, I'm sorry, at BYU, that's a win. Like, I think your 74% is
crap. It seems really low. I was really surprised at how low it was. My model is a little cautious about the first few games.
Yeah.
Because there's less knowledge about the team. But, it gets more locked in later on. That's why
right.
the win percentage was so high last year. But, yeah, it seemed low to me. I was surprised it was so low.
Exactly. So, another Northern Illinois, Idaho State should be wins. USC, I expect that to be a win. Like, that program is in turmoil. I mean, they got a whole new coaching staff, except the head coach practically. Uh-huh. It is an embarrassment. Washington State should be good. But here at home on a Saturday night, like, that should be a win. I mean, but here's the thing, is the backside of my head is like, this can't be happening, right?
Right.
So
you're sort of
like
cautious,
I keep going.
Pessimistic Ute fan brain is like, stop saying win. You
oh,
haven't
yeah.
said loss yet.
Exactly. The loss? I don't say loss
yeah.
at any game except, oh, well, let me flip a coin on Washington right now. All the other games, I expect wins. And for the Utes' sake, if we really want to say that their goal should be, hey, Rose Bowl, playoff, like that's the thing they got to – they can't – in the Pac-12, they can't just win. They have to win by convincing margins. So if they play Washington close, fine. But all these other teams that we look at and say,
right.
yeah,
like
they should win that game.
I've got UCLA have Utah favored by 8-9 points. They have to win that game by 8 or right? They have to be
– it's going
to
be more than that.
Comfortable couple of touchdowns just close
yep.
to victory on that game against Arizona, right? I've got that game. They win by 12. They better win by 12. I mean, 12 – it needs to be easy to win by 12.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to be looking at least
Colorado,
two touchdowns.
Colorado should win that by 15, 16 points. One, I think, exciting thing about this schedule for me, if it continues to play out the way that you know, we all hope that it does and the way that it looks like it might, is those last three games. UCLA, Arizona, and Colorado should be bad. Utah plays two of those at home,
yep.
should win all of them by two touchdowns or more. So if you think about this from sort of a national perspective, let's say Utah rolls into the – rolls out of the UW game, maybe loses the Washington game. That would be their first loss on the season, and they're 8-1.
Yeah.
Right. So you're thinking, oh, maybe they were a top five team. Now they're a top 10 team.
Right.
Somewhere in that range. While other teams are taking on their arch rivals and playing in their big games, Utah is steamrolling, not no-name opponents.
Right. They like have a brand, name. They're just not good opponents, right now.
But they're not good right now.
Right.
For 10, 15 points each, just week after week after week. It sets them up really well to kind of regain cachet, stay in the rankings, and be in a position to, you know, with a good win in the championship game, be a representative in the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it'll be interesting. I mean, the other part, as I look at the schedule, and this is my fan brain speaking, is I see no game where game days come into Utah, which is unfortunate. But I mean,
the home stands are kind of
Washington State. Like,
if Utah should be 4-0 at that point, and Washington State doesn't play anybody. I mean, their toughest opponent before they come to Utah is UCLA, and they should also be 4-0. So I could see two 4-0 teams. What you have to do is you have to look at the whole schedule.
Well, yeah, I don't have the whole schedule. Alabama in front of me.
Plays, you know, Texas that night, I don't know, but plays somebody good.
Yeah,
that,
no,
that
you're totally week, right.
Then that's where they'll go.
But ultimately, it's just my negative fan brain.
Maybe that's better because it doesn't usually go well for Utah when game day comes here. So maybe we just want ESPN to stay away and quietly win every single game on our schedule.
No, we're not quietly doing anything. I want two touchdown wins across the board. Yeah. I can accept Washington as a close game or a loss. But everywhere else, if we're saying we want Rose Bowl, we want playoff, we've got to win convincingly.
USC will probably be close. That's on the road. They've got a lot of talent on that team. I would be surprised if Utah wins by more than a touchdown. And then BYU projects to be reasonably close in the a little bit over a touchdown range. So,
okay.
You know, maybe 8-9 points.
We shall see.
But I think we need another.
Somehow winning 8 games in a row has not put them in their place. So we need this 9th. To be just,
you want another 54-10?
Yeah,
is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah,
I would love it.
I don't want it the same way. 54-10 was very satisfying as it was happening, but there was a lot of weird stuff, right? I want Zach Moss to run for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns and just pound them into the pavement.
So you want a 54-10, but where it's just like drumming nonstop.
Right.
Versus
it's like when Ohio State
a,
takes on Rutgers. That
yeah,
kind of 54
you want that.
Not
okay.
The, oh my goodness, he fumbled on the first play from scrimmage and they ran it back for a touchdown.
Oh my gosh.
And that stuff's
so
great.
Funny.
And it's really
fun
and funny. But I want a win that leaves BYU fans feeling hopeless.
So you want to step on their throats?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and not on the team's throat.
And in the worst way.
Yeah, but in the sense of the rivalry, just to say this rivalry, as you knew it, is over.
Is changed
yes.
forever.
And that's the win that I want to see from the Utes.
Okay.
I just want a where they turn off the TV in the third quarter. That's what I want.
Wow.
You know that game. Utah,
oh, I know
Utah's
that game.
Had that game.
Yeah.
Right? Games that shall not be named where you're like, I just can't do this.
For some
and
reason,
like,
I always force my way through,
you're
though.
You're checking your score on your phone. We've all been there. It's okay. You're still a real fan. That's what I want to have happen to BYU fans. I want them to
all
turn
right.
the TV off.
Well, you heard it here first. Joseph is calling for a 10-2 season with high likelihood of potentially better. And some very high expectations. Last time we set some high expectations, it was in regards to the basketball team. So that's what makes me cautious in doing it.
I do not have the same confidence in my basketball numbers, but I have nailed the Utes every year for the last 6 years.
All right. So with those rose-colored glasses on, I bid you all farewell. We will talk to you next week. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.